So Imran, what's this weird tech bio company that I've never heard of called Recursion Pharmaceuticals that you were talking about on the group chat? And why did its stock just double last month?
Yeah, and interestingly, so Recursion stock did double last month, and interestingly, it slid back down again now, so it's lost a lot of its gains. But this is a 10-year-old drug discovery company based in Salt Lake City, Utah, and NVIDIA is the maker of basically the world's most advanced AI computer chips, GPUs. NVIDIA invested $50 million into Recursion. And so many people saw this as a huge vote of confidence and a statement of Recursion's potential, that the world's most, one of the most sophisticated AI hardware companies in the world, is putting $50 million of its own money into this, relatively young, I don't want to call it a startup anymore because it's publicly listed, but into this young AI drug development company.
Yeah, why is that such a big deal though? Because Recursion Pharmaceuticals has like a market cap of $2 billion. This is a $50 million investment. It's not really moving the needle from that point of view. Why is it so significant?
Yeah, and to put that into context, actually Recursion has raised well over $1 billion. So $50 million is relatively small. And NVIDIA itself is a huge company. I would look up the market cap, but I think it's in the...
It's $1 trillion.
Yeah, $1 trillion company. So if for them investing $50 million is like, I'm not going to do the math, but it's like a stupidly small number. Observers see this as a massive signal that such a sophisticated investor is putting their money into a company like this. So that's the main reason, that it's basically a very, very positive signal. It's not going to move the needle hugely on Recursion's cash piles. I think at the end of last year, they had about $500 million on the balance sheet. So this is a relatively small cash injection, but it's a strategic signal from a company like NVIDIA.
Yeah, and the problem that NVIDIA are addressing is that in this new race with these new generative models and this just AI arms race, the limiting factor is GPUs now. And that is NVIDIA's thing. So that's the huge limiting factor that would stop all of this growth and this AI drug discovery from happening. Now they have the strategic partner and they have access to NVIDIA's cloud service now, which uses their GPUs, right?
Yeah. How much of that $50 million was actually cash, and how much of it was just GPU?
I haven't looked into the full details, but
AWS
I would just assume,
tokens.
Yeah, I don't think they would be giving you AWS tokens. I just assume that it's all cash. And what's interesting about NVIDIA is that it's kind of setting up its own. NVIDIA is acting like a seed investor. They have this program called Inception, and they claim to follow or track about 8,500 AI startups across the world through this virtual accelerator program or incubator program, where they give you a bunch of engineering advice. They'll train you on how to start using their products and systems, and they'll connect some of those startups to investors as well. 8,500 AI startups is 2/3 of the world's AI startups. And NVIDIA has also written big checks into companies like Cohere. So this is not the first significant check that they've written. So they do now have a bunch of strategic investments in basically startups, scale-ups, AI companies.
So they don't know which tech bio company is going to be successful, but they're spreading their bets and they're having their fingers in lots of different pies with this venture model, right?
They're spreading their bets and they are basically catalyzing or aligning the ecosystem of AI startups around their hardware and software offerings, because they're basically rolling out the red carpet to these companies to come and use their services.
Absolutely. So let's do the bull and bear case for Recursion Pharmaceuticals. The bull case is that we're going from a space where we've been discovering drugs using basically the needle in the haystack approach, where people are growing stuff in petri dishes and seeing what happens. But now we're going to a really like sniper rifle approach, where we can computationally like simulate molecules, and we can say, hey computer, can you make a molecule that will have this effect on the human body? And that's much more efficient, right? Like that's the critical like meta thing happening right now.
Yeah, I think there's a few different things going on. So you're right in that the old paradigm, which is still the current paradigm in many cases, of how drugs are developed is based on some basically a story around a piece of biology. So a discovery about a gene which is implicated in a disease, or an observation of a medication or molecule's effect. And then people are basically trying to surgically, using molecular biology, tease apart the mechanisms of that disease and understand how the drug works. Recursion is taking a different approach, which is the first part of it is what they call phenotypic drug discovery, which is that they basically will take like huge numbers of small experimental wells that will have like cells in them or various cell lines that model different kinds of diseases. Those cell lines will often have mutations in them, and then they will expose those cells to different chemicals, to different reagents or different biologically active molecules, and they'll look with cameras to see which cells go from a disease state back to a normal state. So they're literally looking down, you know, with computer vision at pictures of these cells to see which of them recurse, which is go back to a healthy looking state, which is where the name of the company comes from. That was the like paradigm, the principal paradigm the company was founded on. And then they have tons of like industrial automation, tons of image analysis, tons of artificial intelligence on those images to basically tease out these patterns. More recently, they have acquired...
Wait a minute, so that's how they've made their data set, or that's how they've made their unique thing in this space, because they've got tens of thousands of these experiments going on, and through that they've trained models which can now predict how certain chemicals will affect the human body and different disease cells, right?
Exactly. And they're basically saying that, you know, drug development is a data problem. We're going to build like the biggest industrial automation platform, image capture platform, AI platform for image analysis. And we're going to run all of these like scaled experiments in parallel, collect more data than anybody else, and then use that data basically to find the patterns which lead to clues on like which chemicals, which proteins, which viruses, whatever you're putting on those cells has the potential to restore healthy phenotype in a diseased cell state.
I think the interesting part here is that this company isn't doing all of this in silico, right? They're actually using like real cells in a kind of a Monte Carlo way, where they're like, the interesting part is that they're using AI for the image analysis and the analysis of the data that's coming out of these actual like real experiments, single experiments that go on in every single well. Reminds me of a company called Aura Biomedical. I think Matt Caverlin is one of the founders, where they basically built what they called worm bots, right? They're hundreds and hundreds of wells with worms in them, and they expose the worms to different pharmaceuticals, and then they measure the lifespan of the worms. And they're using a similar technique. They're just looking for kind of longevity drugs. I think this is a really interesting approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key thing here is that they probably have like one of the biggest automated wet labs in the world, if not the biggest. They can also find combinations or clues in the activity of these molecules on these disease cells that are not in the published literature. I mean, there's a whole cadre of like AI drug discovery companies, and what they're doing is they're basically just looking for clues in published research papers. So these guys are actually doing potentially novel experiments using new types of data, the images, to find those connections between the molecules and, you know, a disease state, to see what can actually heal these cells, if I can put it that way. And because they're doing a lot of this experimental research in-house, they don't have as much of the problem which plagues a lot of science, which is like, you know, somebody does a research experiment somewhere and other people can't recreate it.
Yeah, and I thought one of the really interesting things from one of their investor reports was that they are rediscovering science that's already been discovered using the traditional methods, but kind of in their computer systems, they're rediscovering it. For example, they're discovering that, okay, this chemical will work on this certain type of breast cancer tumor. And they've discovered that using their own methodology, which almost like is like a proof point about why this could work. Because it's worth saying they've not actually put out a drug. I mean, they've got drugs in phase 2 trials in their pipelines, but they've not got a drug that's out there being used by patients yet. Neither do any of these companies, actually. None of the AI drug discoveries companies do.
No, I think we talked about baricitinib during COVID. Was one where an AI system found a clue between, it's an existing drug, I think it's, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's used in rheumatoid arthritis or something. And it had, you know, efficacy in patients with COVID. But you're absolutely right. Though earlier this year, they did buy two other companies. They didn't buy these companies with cash, but they bought them with stock. So they took ownership of these companies and gave the owners of those companies Recursion stock. The first company is called Cyclica. Now, I'm not an expert in the details of what these guys do, but essentially, this is a company that has like deep learning models, has AI models that incorporate AlphaFold 2 and, you know, those types of protein predictive models. Essentially, what they do, as I understand it, is it predicts the interaction between chemical drugs and proteins in the body, proteins from the proteasome. So it basically gives you the ability to predict without having to do the wet lab research. It's kind of a complementary technique. It's a different technique to predict how chemical drugs, chemical compounds, which are taken from like libraries, research libraries of, you know, different types of compounds, how they will interact with proteins in the body, like where they will bind in terms of binding pockets, where they have complementary structures and so on. So it just, it's like another way of discovering the interaction between your targets and your lead molecules.
Yeah, I mean, even if they have like hundreds of experiments going on, they need to have a way, a mechanism of kind of filtering out small molecules to test in the wet labs. And that's probably a way they do it, using these kind of AI algorithms.
Valence, on the other hand, is a company from Montreal. MILA is an acronym. I think it's basically one of the most advanced AI research centers or of excellence. And this company is basically, it has like very, very deep AI capabilities. So I think the key thing that they can do is they can use like really poor quality data or very sparse data to basically predict like which molecules will be biologically active or be good candidates for drug discovery.
So what's the big idea here? It's saying that we've got this problem in drug discovery of Iram's law, the reverse of Moore's law, where as we put more money, more effort, more time into drug discovery, we're actually becoming less efficient, and where every year we're discovering less and less new drugs despite all this added effort. And it's a promise that, okay, we can use AI to help discover new candidates and that will make everything more efficient and we'll discover therapeutics for more diseases. That's like the big idea here, right? And that's why, that's the bull case basically.
The big idea is that drug discovery is a data and computation problem. And Recursion initially started with data collection through all of the imaging and the combination of these cell lines with chemicals and other, viruses and other types of reagents that could potentially heal the cells, and looking for those clues with cameras, to now looking at more and more advanced applications of AI to predict how chemicals from chemical libraries will interact with proteins in the human body. So they're basically bringing huge amounts of industrial automation and image and data collection coupled with really, really sophisticated and powerful AI capabilities, including powered by NVIDIA GPUs now after this investment, bringing those two things together and trying to increase the likelihood of being able to find molecules that are good drug candidates and also to fail the ones that are not going to work in the clinic. So they're, yeah, that's the big idea, essentially, is accelerating that whole process and increasing the kind of likelihood that your research leads to good quality candidates that go into the clinic.
And currently, we can see from the Q2 report that they made like 11 million revenue and I think over $70 million losses. But the promise or the revenue streams would be one of two things. It would be licensing this to big pharmaceuticals. So we can see, like, for example, Accenture has a collaboration with Sanofi. So that would be one revenue stream, whether other big pharmaceuticals companies use this technology to help them do their own discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing would be that they build their own drug pipeline and they have some big blockbuster drug come out of that, right? Like, that's basically how they're going to make money.
Yeah, exactly. So it's two things. It's exactly as you said it. It's a technology which is sold as a service to pharmaceutical companies or other people developing drugs. And it's a platform like incubating its own drugs. Exactly that.
So on their pipeline, they've got a number of interesting things in development. They've got things in brain malformations. Yep. They've got rare diseases like NF2. They've got precursor to colon cancer, C. difficile. So they've got lots of interesting drug candidates here. But what's your read overall, Imran, on how excited we should be about Recursion Pharmaceuticals?
I think if you believe the core thesis that drug discovery is going to be solved, if I can put it that way, by just collecting more data, scaling your automation, combining wet lab biology with in silico modeling, which they can now do much more effectively with these acquisitions, especially Cyclica. If you buy that thesis, then like Recursion is the biggest player on the block. And it has the most potential there, and it's continuously growing and scaling its infrastructure. The challenge, though, is that the company goes on and on about how much data they're collecting. But if you look at their actual pipeline and you look at some of the results that they've posted, they don't actually show as much promise as like some of the claims that the company is making. So basically, you know, I personally think it's a bit overhyped. Let me give you an example, right? A very concrete example. What was one of the most successful drugs that was discovered during COVID for patients with COVID that was really cheap and actually reduced mortality?
Steroids, right?
Yeah, dexamethasone, right? So Recursion did a bunch of predictions during COVID on which molecules would be effective for patients with COVID. And they predicted dexamethasone, the one drug that that should work and which we have quite a lot of data on. It's a really old drug. They predicted that it wouldn't work, right? So there's one concrete example. It's very open in the public, which is like kind of embarrassing, I would say, in this specific context. The second thing is that, as you said, it's been 10 years now. The company has raised over $1 billion. It's worth less than $2 billion, I think. So it's had a ton of capital invested. It's created like massive, massive ripples. But all we have is basically a few phase two drugs in what I think personally are quite weird indications.
What? So the three drugs that you're talking about, one's in cerebral cavernous malformations, yeah. One is in neurofibromatosis type 2, a rare disease, and the other one is in FAP, which is a precursor to colon cancer. Why are those weird indications?
Well, one of the lead ones that they've made a lot of fuss about, for example, cerebral cavernous malformations. So this is basically like, it's considered a rare disease, but it affects almost 2 million people in Europe and the US. And basically people who are symptomatic with this, it's a genetic condition, they basically get these small like caverns, these small like holes that appear in their brain, and they can have lots of neurological consequences of these structures that form in the brain, right? These little holes, and including things like seizures and so on. Now, the challenge is that historically people have thought of this condition as like a hemodynamic condition. You know, the way to control it is like to control blood pressure and that sort of thing. What they're saying is that they've got this molecule they call REC-994. The molecule, it reduces the formation or the propagation of free radicals, you know, like reactive oxygen species within the brain. And they have some clues. I think this was actually like a molecule that the founder, Chris Gibson, worked on in his PhD. But the data behind this particular molecule in this condition is actually really variable. It's not very strong data. It's kind of weak data. The data that they have basically shows that if you give mice this drug, it reduces the number and the size of these caverns in the brain. And I think most people who, you know, like read about this condition and look at how this drug works are kind of surprised that free radicals would be in the like pathogenesis of this condition.
I think this is more of a kind of a proving the case that they can develop drugs using this method. And so I don't think they're, you know, going to make a ton of money on this drug if it works, but it would be a model of success.
And the people who are investing in Recursion, I think basically from what I've heard and I've spoken to some people who have written large checks into this company, are investing in them for the platform, not for the technology, not for the drug pipeline.
Imran, can I just add though that what you've just described there about how they're finding this rogue, weird new mechanism or this new method of fighting this illness, that might be their magic, because we have a situation now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm very like uneducated in this area, but where a big pharma company will look at indications like asthma or hypertension, these big indications, and they'll just like play around with these drugs. They're like, okay, this drug basically works. Let's swap out this part of this protein. You know what I mean? Let's just like alter it slightly and let's see if this also works. But this is a really rogue new method where you're coming out with these like, whoa, like left field things. Like these are coming out of nowhere. So isn't that kind of the magic of Recursion, that we can make these discoveries that are so different to what we're currently doing?
That's true. So they did use a more basic version of this technology to discover the link between this condition and this drug during his PhD thesis. It wasn't actually the platform that the company has today, as far as I understand it. It was like a piece of academic technology developed by someone at MIT. I think that is the idea, is that companies like Roche and Bayer that are paying Recursion to do some of their drug development, the early drug development, are basically using it for that reason as a kind of exploratory platform.
And what's more on the bear case here around revenue? I mean, is it normal for a company to be 10 years in and posting losses of, you know, almost $300 million a year? Is that pretty normal in tech bio that you have this like high upfront cost before you have like a big payday, or is that a slight red flag?
No, that is more tech bio is different to developing, like, you know, there are companies that basically form around a single drug molecule. And in those cases, you can basically control the profile of investment in the early days because you can do very small experiments. You can outsource the company, the research. The company itself can have a tiny skeleton staff. This is different. This company has not produced any drugs with major inflection points yet has consumed over $1 billion of investment. So this is one of the kind of challenges with these tech bio companies, is they are very, very capital intensive. But there's two other things. Like, one is, like, if you think about Recursion as a platform, having a kind of reusable platform technology that you invest loads and loads of money in, that you can then generate, like, you know, multiple shots on goal, that approach tends to have been used more in vaccine development, in like mRNA delivery technology, in cell and gene therapy platforms like that target certain tissues in the body. Because in those cases, you have like very, very clear targets. You're going after something that's very specific, like a vaccine is going after a very specific pathogen. But the problem tends to be something around the like engineering around the delivery. What these guys are doing is they're putting loads and loads of investment in this infrastructure, but they don't actually have like very clear or consistent targets that they're going after. They're going after like very, very heterogeneous types of endpoints in terms of different diseases that are not really related in any specific way. So some people would say that like it doesn't make sense to build a platform like this that's solving such a general problem, because it's unlikely to produce like highly reproducible results. And we certainly haven't seen that yet.
So what's the final word on Recursion? Kind of interested in the NVIDIA partnership, could be some really interesting things coming out of it, but currently haven't shown anything too interesting in the past decade. That's what I'm getting.
I think that's basically it. Like, I don't think that it scores that well on the strength of its pipeline. I think the underlying technology is interesting, and they do have some like partnerships with Bayer, with Roche, and the Roche one in particular, I think, is worth $150 million up front or something, which is a big partnership. But definitely lots of hype, and the stock has been totally hammered as a result.
Okay, before Adam dies of boredom,
can we talk about Kim Kardashian yet?
Yeah. I feel like this has been a really difficult topic to do well.
No, I think it was good. Adam needed a modafinil before we did this. No, yeah. So Kim Kardashian tweeted last week about this full body MRI scan that she had done. I mean, Adam, as our resident longevity doctor, if Kim K, 42-year-old female, let's just say she's in perfect health outside of this, she comes into your clinic and she says, look, I'm a billionaire and I want to see if there's anything wrong with me. Dr. Batena, you are the best longevity doctor apart from Peter Attia. What's your advice here? Should I get this full body MRI scan?
It's actually not uncommon. Many patients ask about MRI scans, and I've done them with a few people, and I'll tell you why. So in general, I'm not against having more information, and you know, an MRI scan is basically just more information about your body, right? But I think it's more important to look to understand like the motivation behind it, and is getting a whole body MRI scan going to fulfill that? Is it going to answer the questions that you have? So what is the reason you're getting a full body MRI scan?
Kim said on her Instagram post, she said it's got the ability to detect cancer and diseases such as aneurysms in their earlier stages. So she's doing it purely to just find stuff wrong with her before shit hits the fan, basically.
Yeah, is so that a good they're looking for ticking time bombs, right? But yeah. the two things that you mentioned, aneurysms and cancer, are actually quite different. So an aneurysm is usually something that if you scan yourself once, you know that you have an aneurysm. That's it. They do form, towards the end of later years of life. So maybe you can detect them, repeat the scan every like 20 years to detect aneurysms. But cancer is a different thing. First of all, not every cancer shows up on MRI scans. So it depends on what type of cancer you're looking for. And in this case, you're looking for cancers that are what? That are undetectable, are not producing any symptoms. And usually, like, people who don't have any symptoms, who are healthy, it's very, very, very rare for them to have some kind of underlying cancer that will show up on an MRI scan. When cancer forms and is very early, it's so small that it is not going to be producing any symptoms. And in that situation, it's probably not even going to be detected on an MRI scan. unless it's something like a pancreatic cancer or ovarian cancer that can be detected with these scans. But you need to scan at the right time, right? So there's no established kind of frequency for when you get scanned. So she got scanned now. She's 40-something years old. It doesn't make sense to get a scan unless you're going to get scanned every year. So is that the plan? Get scanned every year. And in that situation, that opens you up to a whole lot of risk from things are identified on the scans that need further investigations that might end up being nothing, but are going to cause stress. They're going to cause unwanted further diagnostic procedures. So in general, I advise against MRI scans, but it's an education problem as well. It's like CGMs. Like, should people who don't have any health issues use CGMs? In general, you won't, probably won't
continuous glucose
improve
monitors.
Outcomes. Yeah, continuous glucose monitors. But, you know, if you understand the risk and you understand all of that, then I'm not totally against it.
Adam, what do you think about full body histology?
Full body histology, yeah, that'd be a great one.
Okay, but Adam, so she says, I'm just reading off her Instagram post here. She says, it's really saved some of my friends' lives and I just wanted to share hashtag not an ad. So she, by the way, okay. Apparently a Kim K sponsored Instagram post goes for about $1.6 million and she's put this out for free. So she was so sort of hyped about this and so passionate that she did a free ad for them. But she's saying, look, Dr. Adam, I get what you're saying. I get that I might find something, an incidentaloma, something that is nothing, but look, it saved this friend's life. They spotted a cancer. I'm a billionaire. $2,500 a year for me to get this every year is not a problem. Can you just refer me? Can I just get it?
I'm interested to know what actually happened with her friend, because some people say that, you know, I did the scan and I found something that would have caused all of these issues, but it probably wouldn't have. So Brian Johnson is another person who talks about this, and he did an MRI scan.
Another billionaire.
Another billionaire who's become really famous because he's spending so much money on quantitating his own health.
Yeah, he has a $2 million a year longevity regime, right?
Well, that's what he says. I mean, yeah. But anyway, so one of the things that he's done is he says that he had thoracic outlet syndrome, right, which was identified on an MRI scan. Now, look, I don't have any information about his specific case, so I don't want to talk about his specific case. But in many cases like this, the diagnosing physician will say, oh, we caught this ticking time bomb. You need to do all of these things to improve it. If this was left undiagnosed, it would have caused all these problems down the line. But is that actually true? Probably not.
Ticking time bombs are also good for Instagram engagement.
They are.
Adam, my favorite thing about you is it's like the, you know, the armchair generals whenever a conflict comes up and they just opine on, like, you're like the armchair longevity doctor and there's never a limit to your opining. But no, seriously, answer the question. Like, what's the harm? Like, you've got the money, you're a billionaire. Because there's an important point to be made that all these guidelines we get about not doing this test or not doing full body MRI scans on everyone, those are a population level thing. When you're Kim K or Brian Johnson.
And they take into consideration like the economic impact as well.
Economic impact. The money is no option. And it's all about you personally. Like, you finding that cancer before it becomes an issue is like a $10 billion problem versus someone else.
I agree. In principle, I don't have anything against it. If you know the risks associated and you know that, you know, this probably won't address the underlying concern that you have, which is, you know, finding cancer early. But having said that, maybe there is a problem with public figures pushing these kind of businesses, because it is a business, that it might push these things over other more effective methods of screening, more effective methods of detecting early health issues. So instead of me going and having a colonoscopy or even like a fecal occult stool test to detect early bowel cancer, I'll go and have this MRI scan and now I feel like I'm cancer free, right? But in reality, MRI doesn't really detect bowel cancer that well. So there could be some adverse effects associated with these things, other than like as well, like the just the financial costs from people, you know, wanting to do what Kim K did.
Yeah, this is a really hot sector. I mean, Prenuvo, the company that she used, they've raised $70 million. There's a number of other companies like it. I mean, we discussed a similar-ish one called Nico Health a few weeks ago.
I don't think it's similar. Like, just looking at Nico Health, I think it's totally different. Nico Health seemed to be... They don't even do
very different.
Yeah, they're very different.
I don't think we should compare them.
Well, but they're targeting the same type of person, even though you could argue that
Adam's only in his second round interview as well, so let's hold off on that one.
The first time I heard about Pernuvo was on the All In podcast, because Chamath Palihapitiya mentioned it. Another billionaire, exactly. It seems to be a trend with billionaires. He's also an investor.
Offered it to you for free, would you really say no?
No, and I would do it. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you've done everything else and you just want to know more and you understand the risks, then there's nothing wrong with it.
Wait, Adam, can you, as the armchair longevity doctor, can you opine on how someone like Kim Kardashian, I assume that she has some kind of concierge, some kind of all-star. I mean, her dad was like the hotshot lawyer, right? That was Robert Kardashian. So she has the equivalent of that in the medical world. What do you think the stack is? Like, what do you think that doctor is recommending for Kim K? Like, just, you know, in like, if you had to quickly summarize what kind of protocol she'd be on, what do you think it would be?
Less social media.
No, I don't think it's...
Less read.
So with
no,
these
man,
types
she
of
makes
figures,
money.
And I actually, like, have met people who have like a similar concierge medical professionals on
the
team.
Some billionaires.
Yeah, met a few, and you know what? It's a lot of it is actually just high end psychological support. And so,
oh really?
Like addressing every single like concern they have, and just having that person who is highly knowledgeable, you know, give you reassurance or. Yeah, like give you like instant medical advice.
Are you
but
good at that
at the
sort
end
of thing?
The day, you know, we're unlimited. Our knowledge is only so anything that works, you know, is being disseminated to everyone else. It's not billionaires don't live significantly longer than the average Joe down the street.
Wait, you ducked the question a bit. So let me just opine then. So on Kim K's regime, what do you think it is like? So she's obviously have. Personal nutritionist.
Musty, why are you so interested in Kim K's regime?
Because I want to look like her.
Yeah, let's analyze Kim Kardashian.
I want to look as good as Kim K. Just accept that. I want her build. So she's going to have the nutritionist.
What does that mean?
I want the hourglass
okay,
shape.
Let me tell you. Okay, yeah, she definitely has a nutritionist. She definitely has someone who does her like skin. Liposuction. I mean, I'm just opining here, but yeah, definitely that kind of stuff. The cosmetic procedures,
right? Filler, Botox, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then there's probably a doctor, right? Like kind of a longevity doctor who kind of brings all of this together. Does like the early screening test, does the like general health test, probably like once a year. She would have a blood test.
And we're talking basic bloods here, lipids, blood sugar, that sort of thing.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's what they do even in the like high-end medical centers, like, you know, Mayo Clinic. They would do like an ECG. They would do your general health tests, maybe urine analysis, maybe like a DEXA scan or like body composition test.
Okay, so with the DEXA, they're going to see this is your muscle mass, this is your bone density, that sort of thing. That's what's happening.
Yeah, and then some private physicians do a lot of like off-label prescribing. So this is where it gets a bit dodgy, right?
I want to hear about this. this is a confession from you. some doctors I know do this thing.
This is where like a lot of the pseudoscience comes in, where people like recommend these certain medications that are supposed to have all of these benefits, but with no evidence to back that.
When? What are the big examples of these?
Metformin, Ozempic. Like Ozempic shouldn't be used like in people who are not overweight, but it is being used off-label in people who are overweight because it's effective, right? So that's an example of an off-label use of a medication. Metformin is a big one in like especially in longevity communities, and it's big in I know in like Los Angeles and these places. Because people believe it has longevity properties.
Yeah, I've heard that everyone in LA or Hollywood is using Ozempic to lose weight now. Is there anything else? So 42-year-old lady, maybe some hormones going in there? I mean, for males, I know
that's,
TRT.
That's a big thing now,
HRT,
Everyone is doing, they call it bioequivalent hormone therapy, which basically means just you're on hormones. hormone support.
And then she'll have some crazy supplements, like I'm guessing that may or may not be too evidence-based, but they might help with things like, I mean, like biotin, for example, helps with like hair and nail growth, you know, things like that. Creatine maybe help out with workouts, helps out with brain function.
Probably people really like personalized supplement stacks. Again, like very limited evidence that any of these supplements work. There's some evidence that, you know, they can help certain aspects of health, though.
Fair enough. Shall we finish off with some feedback?
Yeah.
So we got a lot of feedback on our last episode. It was on what David Sinclair is hiding from Elon Musk. It was quite popular, actually.
How good was that title, though?
Yeah. So we always have a brainstorming session. It's Adam's actual secret skill. It's your secret talent. Like we here, I thought you were talentless, but your actual talent is thinking of provocative ways of framing podcasts.
Being provocative. That's your talent.
And it did pretty well. It went around. So it got some, like, you know, people saying great interview. Someone said, "Oh my God, Dr. Adam, love him. He's from my country, Palestine." Are you from Palestine?
No, I'm actually from Jordan. Okay, well, sorry to break your heart.
Oh, fair enough.
Not the first time you've broken someone's heart, Adam.
Then we had, I don't love these topics because we're kind of criticizing someone, being haters in the space. So you get a lot of diversity. Some people saying you guys are right about David Sinclair and kind of like piling on him. And then other people saying, someone said, wrong. David Sinclair is the expert in the field of aging and well-respected by other scientists. Who are you? Which is a good
point. Which is fair. Which is totally fair.
Nobody.
Yeah, nobody's. I think, Imran, you were called a nobody a few episodes ago or something like that.
I absolutely concur with that assessment.
Okay. But look, I think it's fun to cover some like more topical things that are going on. Like this Kim K tweet, for example, Kim K Instagram post. It seems to do well on YouTube as well.
Yeah, give the people what they want.
I think the whole Kim K scan thing is that you can tell people about large scale public health studies that show that these types of things don't have a net positive effect. But as long as you hear like one anecdote of a real person, where you see one tweet of a person who's like, I think there was one that went viral a few months ago. A guy picked up something on his kidney, posted a picture of himself after his operation, had like some tumor removed. That single case will stick in people's minds for such a long time. And I think it just preys on people's anxiety. And I think, you know, in some cases, people are probably having these scans to kind of alleviate their anxiety.
No, I think the bigger point is that we remember or respond well to narratives and stories over data points, fundamentally. Mm. And that is a good story that someone stopped themselves from dying from renal cancer with a scan. But you're right, it's interesting. All right, guys, thank you very much. See you next week.
Yeah.
Look forward to it.
Oh my God, he just goes so brutal. Yeah.